Weather kept many hunters indoors, especially on opening weekend. But he says just because hunters may not have gotten a deer this year, it doesn't mean they're not out there.
In much of the state, and this is going to be hard for a lot of people to swallow when they hear it, but in much of the state, we do have extremely high deer numbers still.
Hunters in western Wisconsin took the most deer, claiming nearly 37% of the total kill. Northern Wisconsin had the fewest number of deer registered. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
State officials say Wisconsin farms spilled more than 1 million gallons of manure this year. That's the greatest amount in 7 years. Manure handling is a volatile issue in Wisconsin as dairy farms grow larger. An analysis by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel shows about a third of the spill since 2007 came from farms with 700 or more cows. Wisconsin has nearly 200 large-scale livestock operations. The Department of Natural Resources records show the second largest volume in spills happened in 2008 when 905,000 gallons were released. In the latest spill, 300,000 gallons of manure spilled from a ruptured pipe November 24th at a facility in Dane County that uses farm waste to produce electricity. This is Wisconsin Public Radio News.
Support for WPR comes from Rutabaga Paddle Sports, supplying natural fiber clothing, outerwear, snowshoes, and other holiday gifts for outdoor enthusiasts and nature lovers. 220 West Broadway in Monona or on the web at rutabaga.com.
Support also comes from CTM with their signature production, A Christmas Carol, December 13th through the 23rd, a Madison family tradition at Overture Center's Capitol Theater. Details and tickets at ctmtheater.org.
The world is mourning the loss of anti-apartheid leader and the first black president of South Africa, Nelson Mandela, who died yesterday at the age of 95. President Obama says we should also celebrate Mandela's life.
I am one of the countless millions who drew inspiration from Nelson Mandela's life. My very first political action, the first thing I ever did that involved an issue or a policy or politics was a protest against apartheid. I would study his words and his writings. The day he was released from prison gave me a sense of what human beings can do when they're guided by their hopes and not by their fears. And like so many around the globe, I cannot fully imagine my own life without the example that Nelson Mandela set. And so long as I live, I will do what I can to learn from him. To Gresham Michelle and his family, Michelle and I extend our deepest sympathy and gratitude for sharing this extraordinary man with us. His life's work meant long days away from those who loved him most. And I only hope that the time spent with him these last few weeks brought peace and comfort to his family.
We will welcome your thoughts on the life and legacy of Nelson Mandela during this first segment of our Week in Review. Was he an inspiration to you? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, December the 6th. We will also have our two guests from different political perspectives weigh in on other top state and national news stories of the week, from the latest on the Affordable Care Act to the firing of one of Governor Walker's campaign aides for anti-Hispanic tweets. And we welcome your input on all of these stories and more. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page at The Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. We are happy to have with us Dan Kopanky, former Republican state senator from La Crosse and owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me again.
Thank you for being with us. Also with us is Ed Filone, associate professor of law at Marquette University. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Ed.
Well, let's start first, Ed Filone, with you. Your thoughts on the passing of Nelson Mandela.
Well, I think the world has been waiting. We knew this was coming, and it's right to celebrate the man's life. He was a great leader, a great political leader. I can certainly remember when apartheid ended and South Africa was undergoing transition, and many people assumed that the country would descend into violence and chaos, and that the black Africans would seek revenge and retaliation for years of abuse that they had suffered under the apartheid system, and that the white South Africans would either flee the country or suffer discrimination and abuse. And that did not happen, and it did not happen largely because of Nelson Mandela and his actions, his policies, his strong political leadership. And I think that it's important not to deify him, not to say that he was some special individual anointed by God and that he had characteristics and abilities the rest of us mortals don't have. I think instead we should recognize it was the choices he made to not turn his people against each other, to unite the country, to take actions and policies designed to benefit the entire country, not just segments of the country. It was that conscious decision on his part, that style of leadership, that I think led to his success and what made him great.
Mm-hmm. Dan Kopanky, your thoughts?
Well, certainly would agree with Ed on all of that he said, and we should celebrate his life, and we were really blessed to have him here for as long as we did, 95 years, but when you think of Nelson Mandela, you think of what a leader should be, a man who really did stand up and fight for human dignity, a man of great courage, certainly an inspiration to so many of us, and his legacy certainly will last for generations. I mean, he's going to go down as one of the greatest human beings of our era, and his legacy, again, is going to last for so long, and certainly there's so many things that leaders can learn from Nelson Mandela.
1-800-642-1234, if you would like to comment about the life and legacy of Nelson Mandela. Was he an inspiration to you? And we welcome that call right away, since we are going to be moving on to other issues in the news this week, in this Week in Review. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Laura in Madison is with us. Hello, Laura.
Good morning. To me, Nelson Mandela represented the power of transformation. He underwent transformation changes himself as he sought to change his country, and I think he grew more powerful through those transformations, and that's what I witnessed, and it also showed the power of a peaceful path, as that part of the world has shown us before in Gandhi. It showed that, for example, that trade embargoes could work in place of war, armed conflict.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Laura.
Sure.
Do you have any add any comment on Laura's thoughts?
Well, I think her comment on transformation is right on. I think that if you look at Nelson Mandela's life, his career, he did transform a great deal. He, you know, the roots of the anti-apartheid movement, there was obviously instances where they resorted to violence, and it could have spiraled into a sort of a violent insurrection. There were communist ties, very strong communist ties early in the movement, which led the U.S. government to be very wary of Nelson Mandela early on. It could have devolved into some sort of ideological struggle. But Mandela was able to keep his eyes focused on the ultimate goals of freeing his people from apartheid, and he was able to transform himself, his ideology, and his tactics, and adjust as his career went on. And that's something I think we should all learn from.
Any final thoughts, Dan?
Well, just that is his leadership, again, was such that people believed in him, followed him, and that's why he was so successful in his life.
Well, President Obama did speak about Nelson Mandela's passing last night. He is going to be attending Mandela's memorial service when it happens. President Obama also in the news this week talking about healthcare.gov getting back on track. He says that his signature healthcare law is working and will work into the future. He says that the benefits of the law have gotten lost in recent months as attention was focused on the website problems where people go to sign up for health insurance. And he says the website is now working well for the vast majority of users. So, Dan Kopanky, the healthcare law is working and so is the website. So let's move on, or what do you say?
Well, I would add he declares that the healthcare law is working better. And not necessarily the law, but the website. And again, that depends on who you're talking to. You can listen to security experts, website security experts say, don't go on the site because of all that the vital information is not secure and people have access to it. I understand there are no payment provisions yet that are working, that are in place, so you can go on the website, you might be able to enroll, but there's no payment method that has been established that works. So there's just a whole lot, and that's just the website. And I was on the show several weeks ago talking about the website is something that they will get ironed out eventually because it's been done before by companies such as Amazon. That'll get taken care of. But then once we get into the meat of the law, we're finding so many problems and so many issues that this website is just the beginning. So the website itself may be working better. People may have more access, but there are huge problems on the horizon that will be dealt with in the coming days and months and years.
And Flon?
Well, you know, I think that right now what we see here is that the campaign against Obamacare has shifted. It shifted from all-out assault to keep it from coming into effect, either through legal challenges or obstruction in Congress and possible repeal. None of that has worked. So now the fight against Obamacare has shifted to rhetoric and to creating a perception. And really, we're getting these daily drips of criticism, different lines of attack. It's wrong this way. It's not working that way. Have you thought about the other? And the effort here is really to drive up anger in the Republican base in anticipation of the 2014 elections, drive up turnout if possible. None of this has anything to do with the basic question. Can we expand health care, access to health care, affordable health care insurance to more Americans? Can we get control over the rising health care costs that eat up more and more of our annual incomes and try and get that under control? All of this rhetoric really speaks nothing to those issues and whether we're fixing them or addressing them. It doesn't give us any alternative ways to fix or address them. And really, it's driving perceptions. They want to create a perception that the law is not working. And whether the reality is there or not is irrelevant, as long as they create that perception.
We are talking with Ed Filone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University, and Dan Kopanky, former Republican State Senator from La Crosse, about the news of the week. We'll welcome your input. What issue happened in the news this week that you would like to talk about? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
From one generation to the next, Wisconsin families have entrusted their children to Wisconsin Public Television and its family of friends on Sesame Street, Curious George, and Thomas and Friends. Its nonviolent commercial-free programming educates and inspires children. Check the website at wpt.org for detailed broadcast information.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Dells, indoor water parks and theme parks, dining, entertainment, and outdoor recreation. More at wisdells.com. Wisconsin Dells, the water park capital of the world.
Support also comes from Habitat Restore of Dane County, accepting donations of new and reusable building materials, including cabinets, furniture, and appliances, helping to fund Habitat for Humanity's home building program. Details at restoredane.org.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up this afternoon, it's Central Time. Veronica Rickard and Cynthia Schuster will look at the life of Nelson Mandela, who passed away yesterday at the age of 95. Then they discuss great drinks for winter weather, and they'll also hear why some Vietnam veterans are going back to Vietnam. That and more coming up on Central Time, today after 3 o'clock. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Dan Kopanky and Ed Filone, and you too, if you would like to join our Week in Review. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Joy Cardine Show. Tweet us at Joy Cardine Show as well. Well, White House Press Secretary Jake Carney was recently asked by a reporter this week if the fixed-up website is mission accomplished. Carney says it wasn't, because there are always going to be some glitches, but significant progress has been made on the problems. Carney also said, I am fine with calling it Obamacare. The president is fine with it. We are focused on the care. Apparently, there was a little bit of pushback this week at suggestions by the media that he and others in the administrations have abandoned the term Obamacare and would rather refer to it as the Affordable Care Act. Might be getting into semantics, but Obamacare or Affordable Care Act? Ed Filone, do you think it makes a difference? Oops, are you there? I'm sorry, I didn't go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think it makes any difference at all. I've been calling it Obamacare for years, and I support the bill entirely, still support the bill. You know, this is again a sign of the times, and it's sad to see journalism descend to this. Where you have a reporter, you know, asking the press secretary to accept a certain characterization, just so if the press secretary agrees and accepts that characterization, then the reporter can turn around and criticize him for it. It's just pure gotcha journalism. It's beneath ABC News. I sure hope that individual did not graduate from Marquette's journalism school. You know, this is what we're fighting about. We're fighting about what to call it. We're fighting about whether the president is afraid to call it that. And it just diverts attention from the real issues, which is, are we finally going to get a handle on these spiraling health care costs? Are we finally going to get serious about expanding health care to people who don't have it? You know, it's never made sense. It's never made sense to have health care tied to employment in our country. Because if you can't find a job, if you lose your job, then you lose your health care. And it's a double whammy. And so we've been trying to find a way to move out of that system. It looks like under Obamacare we have found a successful way, one that adopts conservative principles like the health care exchange, the individual mandate, which were first proposed by conservative think tanks. It's not a government takeover of the system. It's a third way, using the government to mediate between individuals and the private market. I think this is a system that's going to succeed, and I hope we can stop playing word games.
Dan?
Well, getting back to the original question here about whether you call it Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, I don't think it matters. It's his signature legislation in his presidency, and it will stand that way whether it's successful or not successful. This is what it's about. But if I could go back to some of Ed's comments, and I respectfully have to disagree with you about this being rhetoric. Many of us on our side of the aisle firmly believe that this is bad legislation. Not one Republican voted for it. The majority of the people on several polls will tell you that they're against this law. So we are, it's not rhetoric. We firmly believe that this is bad public policy. It needs to be stopped, and we need to take another look at our healthcare system. We still have one of the best in the world, not perfect for sure, but one of the very best in the world. And, you know, there's numbers out here of 15% or somewhere in that number of us have no insurance whatsoever, which could be 45 million people, which is a large number. But instead of upsetting the rest of us and our health care policies and our health care, why don't we just address the 15% or the 45 million? And I think that's where the Republicans would like to go as far as addressing this issue is concerned.
Why not just do that, Ed Falloon?
Well, I think what you need to see, first of all, is if there is going to be the harsh rhetoric, the daily attacks on Obamacare, I think that those doing the attacking need to take the responsibility to propose alternative fixes. And that's just not coming from the right wing right now. There is no alternative. And in terms of focusing on those without health insurance, well, the expansion of Medicaid, which is part of Obamacare, is designed to expand the Medicaid program, government taxpayer-funded health care, for more of the poor in this country and to reach a lot of those people that Dan's talking about. And, of course, that's the very Medicare expansion that Governor Walker rejected and walked away from $119 million that could have been in this biennial budget because he did not want to take federal dollars. So I think that, yes, we do have to address those who lack health insurance, but what the Obamacare bill does is it addresses expansion of Medicaid to the lowest working poor or those in poverty, and also access to individual policies not based on employment for the middle class. It's a comprehensive approach. That's what you need, and we're not hearing any alternatives from the right wing.
Let me take a call from Randy in Key Wascom. Hello, Randy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Basically, listening to Ed there and his lies, this bill is a train wreck, as Max Baucus said. As far as president pushed off the employer mandate because, from everything I've read, what's going to happen when the employer mandate goes through is there's going to be millions of Americans that are going to get thrown out of their policies because employers aren't going to be able to afford it. People are finding out that the policies aren't near as affordable as what the president has said. Remember, the Democrats took $700 million out of Medicare to help pay for this. When it was put through, they compared 8 years of 10 years of revenues to 8 years of expenses to say that it will not add anything to the deficit. As far as I can tell, if I remember right, right now it's going to add like they're up to like $620 billion it's going to add to the deficit. So, and
Randy, I have to hold you there. We can't cover every single criticism you have of the act, but sounds like Randy thinks it's a train wreck. Ed Falloon, so what do we do about this?
Well, what we do is we allow the law to go into effect and operate. And a lot of these projections are worst case and misleading and comparing apples and oranges. We won't know for sure whether the law has succeeded, probably for about 10 years, when we can look at the number of people who have insurance and whether the cost curve, the increasing cost of health care, have been brought under control. So for anyone to say that the law has been proven already to fail is wrong. It hasn't even started. I mean, people are just signing up for policies that will start in January. So I think we have to give the law a chance. It was debated furiously in Congress and in the Court of Public Opinion. It passed. We've heard these arguments again and again against it. They were not accepted. The law passed. The majority of Americans wanted it to pass. And therefore, we should give it a chance to operate and see if we were right. And if we were wrong, well, then we learn from that and we move on. But you can't declare it a failure before it starts.
John in Rhinelander is with us now. Hi, John.
Hi. I wonder if we could talk to a specific incident of right-wing propaganda against the Affordable Care Act. It appeared on Hannity. A right-wing activist who had four children came on, and he said that the law wouldn't cover his 18-month-old baby. That circulated through the right-wing press. It was never retracted after they found out that this guy had, in fact, only put three of the children on the forum on the website. And then he claimed that the act wouldn't cover a baby. It was just outrageous, never retracted, and not widely covered in the press. I think maybe talking about it today would help. Thank you.
All right, thanks, John. Well, Dan, you want to react to that?
Oh, I'm sure that you can find cases like that, but you're going to find millions of other people that have been dropped from their policies. They're scrambling right now. They can't get on the website. They can't pay for insurance. They may have to go to the hospital in January or February, and they're not going to know if they have insurance, if they have coverage because of this website failure. There are many, many problems here, many, many issues, and as Randy said earlier when he called in, Max Baca said this was indeed a train wreck, and it is. And that's why, sure, there's rhetoric. The other side is going to call it rhetoric, but we are very sincere in our efforts to stop this for the people of this country.
I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review, talking today to Dan Kopanky and Ed Filone, two guests coming from different perspectives about the top issues in the news this week. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you would like to introduce a story from the news this week. Let's talk about a related issue, the special session of the state legislature on badger care. The state assembly voted this week in the special session to delay for 3 months Wisconsin's deadline to kick people off of badger care. In order to pay for that, 83,000 childless adults who earn less than the poverty line will have to wait that long, 3 months, to get Medicaid coverage. The Senate is going to take up this bill later this month. So, Dan Kopanky, what should the Senate do?
Well, they should vote in favor of the same bill that the Assembly did, because these 83,000, unfortunately, are not going to have this coverage for 3 months, but they haven't had it up till now, and it's something, a provision that has been put in some time ago, and it's been delayed because of the problems of getting on the website and getting coverage through Obamacare. And so we don't want to kick 72,000 people off of badger care. So it's kind of a wash. It's very unfortunate, but again, it's another problem that is a result of website woes with Obamacare. And again, going back a little bit about ideas, if you look at some of the states, including Wisconsin, not under Walker alone, but under previous administrations, we have had provisions for people to get coverage, and normally it's been over 90% in the last few years of people in Wisconsin have had some kind of health care coverage. So states are leading the way, Wisconsin being one of them under administrations from both sides of the aisle. So there are ideas out there. It's just that idea after idea was rejected, because I know there were, I don't know how many amendments that were offered by the Republicans during the debate on Obamacare, and they were all rejected. So we did have ideas. We did bring them forward. We didn't have the numbers. That's to get some of those amendments passed.
Mm-hmm. Ed Filone on the badger care bill?
Yeah, well, Governor Walker made a very bad decision not to accept federal dollars to expand Medicaid. And instead, he decided he would try and argue that he was choosing an alternative way to expand coverage to the poor by kicking 72,000 not-quite-destitute people off of badger care and enrolling slightly more very destitute people who had not previously been eligible for badger care. So he wanted to make an argument that he's expanding access to health insurance very modestly, you know, about 8,000 people, in an alternative way where he didn't have to take federal dollars and expand Medicaid, which would have increased to a much higher percentage of people getting health insurance. Now it's Christmas. The actual time has come to kick off these people from badger care. They're not quite destitute. And he doesn't want to look like a Grinch. And so he's using the website problems as an excuse to delay the impact of his bad decision that was made many months ago. The fact is that the people that get kicked off of badger care, the not quite destitute 72,000, are being told that they should buy policies on the health insurance exchange, and they don't need badger care. But these are people about 133% of the poverty line. So they're not destitute, but they still are pretty poor. And there's real questions whether they can afford to use the exchange and buy policies, whether they have the income to do that, even with subsidized rates.
So the better alternative for the very poor is to expand Medicaid and to expand that program to include more people just above the poverty line. That's better than forcing them to the exchanges because they don't have the money to buy a policy. The exchanges are better for the middle class and working people, not for the very poor. So this was a cynical ploy from the very beginning. It was a bad idea from the very beginning. And really, this website issue is just an excuse to delay the impact of this bad decision.
We'll move on to some other issues. In addition to health care, President Obama this week also talked about America's income gap, saying it is a defining challenge of our time. He says that it's jeopardized the nation's middle class, and he wants Washington to take action to ensure the economy works for all. This comes as fast food workers nationwide held another strike yesterday in support of a higher minimum wage. The president came out in favor of hiking the minimum wage, too. Right now, the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. So first, Ed Filone, what do you think about President Obama's addressing the income inequality or the country's income gap this week?
Well, I think it's a very important issue, and I think he's right to identify it as an issue. Some of the statistics he used were very telling. The top 10% of people in our country, based on income, used to have a third of the nation's income. Now they have a half. And income disparity between CEOs and the average worker has risen from 20 to 30 times the pay of an average worker to 237 times. So really the gap has widened. The question is, what do you do about it? How do you resolve this gap? It's not healthy for our society to see a smaller proportion garner ever greater proportions of the national wealth. And that's where the minimum wage, from what I can read on economic studies, it's been something raising the minimum wage that has been studied and argued for years and years and years. It seems to me that the evidence suggests it's at best a modest approach. It's going to help a small subset of people if you raise the minimum wage, but not going to help as many people as you'd like. But politically, it seems to be the approach that is safest for politicians. So I think it's more than likely that's what we'll do. But I think long-term, that's not the solution. Long-term, the solution is creating jobs for U.S. residents that stay in this country that don't require expensive advanced college degrees to do. And that's just going to be a long-term project.
Yeah. Well, fast food workers did go out on strike in cities across the country, including, it says here, La Crosse, Milwaukee, Madison, and Wausau, the workers are wanting a raise in the minimum wage. Your thoughts on this, Dan Kopanky?
Well, first off, I would want to take a poll of those people that were rallying yesterday here in La Crosse and throughout the state as to how many of those were actually people that worked at these establishments or any fast food type establishment. I would bet that it was minimal, if any. These are union leaders and other leaders who feel that a minimum wage increase is the way to. The minimum wage was never meant to be a living wage. It's an entry level position. 70% or more of the people that are under minimum wage are 25 years or younger. They are entry level. They build their resumes. They gather work experience. They garner skills, and then they go off and use those skills and use that resume to get better paying jobs. But it all starts with a job. You have to have a job. And we started raising this minimum wage to $10, $15 in some places. Those jobs are going to go away. The businesses will go away. And then who's going to be the winner there? So entry-level positions with a minimum wage starting wage rate can offer tremendous opportunities for people who want to get into the workforce, who want to grow, and who want to again, get work experience and skills that will get them to a higher level. That's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. Ed, any comment on that these fast food worker strikes were mainly, union leaders and not necessarily the workers?
Well, blame it on the unions, right? Well, it's effective to do that, I guess. Eventually it's going to run out of gas and lose its effectiveness as an attack line. But I think that
you know, Dan makes an interesting point that, yes, originally the minimum wage was intended for entry-level workers, and certainly I don't think anyone way back when envisioned that you'd have full-time workers permanently doing these jobs. But, in fact, that is actually what's happened. That's the way the economy has evolved. We've lost the good-paying, unskilled job. With the decline of organized labor's influence, there hasn't been the pressure for unskilled laborers to get better wages. Technology has replaced a lot of unskilled work. Outsourcing has sent unskilled jobs overseas. And the cost of education has gone up and up, and you know, we no longer have the GI Bill funding education to the extent it used to after World War II. So really, we have an economy that has shifted, and we have a greater number of people who are working full-time in these dead-end jobs, and you cannot make a living. You can't pay rent. You can't pay your daily expenses, food, on that wage. And all it takes is a car accident or an unexpected health incident to spiral you into poverty. So this is not a sustainable system. We need to address it. Now, again, I think raising the minimum wage to around $10 an hour from $7.25 is not high enough that it's going to cause employers to shut down. I think, you know, if you raised it up to $15 an hour or something, maybe that would have an impact. But it's also not going to significantly help large numbers of people who are struggling in this economy. So I think, again, the focus has to be long-term, creating unskilled jobs that are in this country that don't get replaced by technology. And that's a tough challenge, and that's something we have not faced up to. We're not doing the kind of investment that we need as a society in creating these jobs. Instead, we look for quick Band-Aid fixes.
Let's get a quick call in from Bill in Kenosha. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I'm calling in regard to Dan's Kopanky saying that these are entry-level wages and they're going to help you build a resume and get a better job. That is baloney. You get in those jobs, and it's going to be a dead end forever. There is no such thing as stepping up within a company anymore. They don't recognize any of that. They rather hire somebody who's had a college degree to go work at a cashier at McDonald's and not take somebody from inside. That is baloney, and it will never allow you to better yourself and get into the middle class.
All right. Baloney, Dan.
Oh, I wonder how many employers he's talked to. And, you know, a large percentage of the jobs that are created in this country and in the state of Wisconsin are by small employers, small businesses, two or three or five employees. These people are hungry for men and women that want a job, that come in and work hard and want to grow their skills and their work experience and get better at what they do and get promoted. And it does happen. It absolutely does happen, and it's a work ethic and it's desire, and there are so many opportunities. Right now we're very, very short on welders in the state of Wisconsin throughout this country. Not everyone can be a welder. I could not be a welder, but a lot of people can be. They 1 year at a technical college, and they starting wages are $18 an hour. There are avenues to grow, and we just have to seek them out. But it starts with hard work, and it may start at $7.25 an hour. That's where it starts, and that's how you're much better off at $7.25 than sitting home not doing anything. And you have opportunities. You can show your employer, I am one. You can show your employer that you have a desire, you have a work ethic, and you want to grow. And employers, for the betterment of their own business, will promote people from within. It happens over and over and over.
Dan Kopanky is a former Republican state senator from La Crosse, owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team, and Ed Falone is an associate professor of law at Marquette University. They are regular Week in Review guests for us when we talk about the top state, national, and international news each week. We'll continue with our Week in Review and talk about Governor Walker this week firing an aide over anti-Hispanic tweets. This is the same campaign aide who signed a fundraising letter that was encouraging people to forget about spending money on Christmas gifts and instead to donate that money to Governor Walker. We'll talk about that coming up as the Week in Review continues here on the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Farmers Union, working for family farmers and rural communities, promoting sustainable farm and food policies for all people. More at wisconsinfarmersunion.com. United to grow family agriculture. Support also comes from Hilldale Shopping Center, celebrating 50 years, offering upscale shopping and dining with over 60 national and locally owned stores, restaurants, and Sundance cinemas on Madison's Near West Side. More at Hilldale.com.
Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up after 9 o'clock, it's 45 North. Ann Strainchamps will talk with National Book Award winner James McBride about 19th century abolitionist John Brown, race in America, and the power of fiction to illuminate truth. That's coming up after 9 on 45 North. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, and it's time now for our Week in Review quiz. Here's our quiz question. The mobile advertising firm Marchex released a study this week that ranks the states in terms of behavior on customer service calls. Wisconsin is ranked number one in the country in this survey, but it might not be for a reason that we would want to brag about. What are we number one in? What do we do worse in Wisconsin than any other state in the country? 1-800-642-1234 is our number if you'd like to call in your guess. We're only going to do this for 5 minutes. So 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and the winner and the answer will be announced at the end of the program. The winner will be entitled to a book that we have featured recently on the program. So what do Wisconsinites do worse than any other state when it comes to customer service calls? All right, that's a hard one, I can tell. You're hardly calling, but that's okay. We're going to continue talking about the news of the week with Dan Kopanky, former Republican state senator, and Ed Falone, associate professor of law at Marquette University. Governor Walker this week fired a campaign ad for making anti-Hispanic tweets. Taylor Palmisano, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, was the campaign's deputy finance director. Looks like it was March of 2011 that she wrote that she wanted to choke a noisy librarian custodian that she described as an illegal Mex. She also tweeted about passengers riding the bus with her, saying nobody speaks English and these people don't know how to control their kids. Walker says that he was not aware of the tweets until they were reported, and he took action this week. The aide was fired. This same aide also sent a fundraising email right after Thanksgiving, implying that parents should give money to Walker's campaign instead of buying toys for their kids for Christmas. Walker said yesterday he would not have sent that letter. Ed Falone, I want your comments first on this. Is this a big deal or not?
Well, I think the governor was correct that those social media comments were offensive. And what's offensive about it is, you know, let's be clear, she sees people of Mexican descent, and she makes two assumptions. First, she assumes that they were not born in this country. And then second, she assumes they're here in an undocumented status. And it's those same kind of stereotypical assumptions that are at play if someone sees an Italian and just says, oh, you must be a mobster involved in organized crime, or any of the other variety of ways that people don't view others as individuals, but rather view others as stereotypes. And that's something that is just generally offensive. We all have a right to be viewed as individuals and judged as individuals. So I think the governor was correct. They were offensive comments. Now, as to the fundraising letter, all I'll say on that is that if Governor Walker is going to run for president, he's going to need an A team on his campaign staff, and this is not the conduct of an A-team type person. So I hope he upgrades the quality of his staff if he's going to run for president.
All right. Dan Kopanky?
Well, I'm going to agree with Ed on everything he said here. Certainly someone with her mindset, Taylor's mindset, should not be working for a governor, any governor. And the governor did take some quick action, although I would think that someone between the governor and Taylor would have known about these tweets much sooner than when were they reported this past Tuesday. So someone else, and that's why I agree totally with Ed that he's got to have an A-team around him, and somebody dropped the ball here on this issue and it allowed it to become, you know, the story that it is and should never have happened.
What do you think, Dan? Is the governor guilty of bad judgment for having Taylor working in a relatively, it sounds like, high position in his campaign?
Well, again, I mean, the buck stops at his desk. Certainly someone hired Taylor, and whoever that is probably didn't do a full vetting of what this person is all about and should have. So I think not only Taylor, but, again, someone between the governor and her should certainly be brought into account here and held accountable for what's happened.
Yeah, and final word, Ed Filone, is this this story is done and we move on, or is this going to stick around for a while?
Well, I think what Governor Walker's quick action in firing the individual does is it hopefully puts an end to the news cycle and puts an end to the story. But I think that, you know, going forward, there will continue to be attention paid to the staff, because it is a legitimate issue. What quality of people does the governor surround himself with? And I think it's a legitimate issue there. So if there are future questions about staffers, I think it eventually would start to raise eyebrows.
Colleen in Darlington. Hi, Colleen. What's your question or comment?
Well, if Walker didn't know about that email, he should be telling everyone who gave her permission to send that out. I find it very hard to believe that he didn't know that.
No, should he have known about that letter or that email asking for campaign donations in lieu of Christmas presents for kids, Dan Kopanky?
Well, again, as a caller suggests, someone should have known that. And if the governor didn't, and the governor, again, that's a very high-profile, very busy, on-the-move position that he holds, and he's got people under him that are assigned the tasks of overseeing, certainly in his campaign, these sort of incidents like this email and the letter and the tweet. So someone, again, has dropped the ball for the governor, and whether the governor knew it or not, I can't say. I don't know, but someone did, I would think, and someone should be held accountable.
Yeah, and John in Burlington wants to talk about this, too. John, quickly, as we're running short on time.
Yeah, I just think it's a joke. I think the idea that he has no idea the quality of people he has around him or who's involved with his administration when stuff like this happens, you know, someone else is responsible for that person. But, you know, I think it just speaks to this kind of this one. It was 2 years ago, and no one, you know, that's the only comment she's ever made like that behind closed doors. Or I think it's just kind of, you're not fooling us.
Yeah. The tweets, I think, was it you, Ed, who said that it's odd that they were, those tweets were 2 years old?
Yeah, they apparently were 2011. But, mm-hmm. You know, we have an individual here, a governor, who's talking that he wants to run for president. And so, you know, there's a big jump in what's required of a campaign staff when you go from county executive to the governor's office. And there's a big jump what's required of a campaign staff when you go from the governor's office to the presidency. And so I think in the gear up to the next presidential campaign, there's going to be jockeying as different potential candidates try to attract very well-qualified, well-experienced people to work on their campaigns. And I think Governor Walker is going to need to try and get some really top-flight people if he wants to make a serious run at the presidency. And you know, right now, his office is not operating in that fashion.
Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout has reportedly hired someone to organize a statewide campaign for a possible run for governor. She has not formally jumped in the race. Only Mary Burke has so far, but it's looking like Senator Vinehout might might challenge Mary Burke for the Democratic nomination for governor. Ed Filone, would you like to see Vinehout get in the race, or are you happy with Burke? Any thoughts on a possible primary here?
Well, I think that the good news for the Democrats is whether it's Burke at the top of the ticket for them or Vinehout, the Marquette Law School poll shows 45% would vote for Burke, 44% for Vinehout. So you've got a very energized, solid Democratic base who basically what that poll shows are committed to opposing the governor and voting against him. So, you know, it's good to be a Democrat. You start with that base. You've got an energized base. What's interesting to me is that neither Burke nor Vinehout is really popular with organized labor. And so they're not, you know, they're not going to have that sort of heavy support from labor. They're not going to be closely tied to labor. And so it's going to be difficult to launch the attack on them as puppets of organized labor, which I'm sure Governor Walker is salivating about launching that attack on whoever runs against him. It's not going to work with either Vinehout or Burke. So it'll be interesting to see if the governor can come up with a different attack line.
Yeah. So which one would the governor want to face, Dan Kopanky, or your thoughts on Kathleen Vinehout possibly getting into the Democratic race?
Yeah, I served with Senator Vinehout, and while I disagreed with her many, many times, she also was not afraid to be independent and go against her party. She does her homework. She's hardworking. Really, no one has the right to tell her that she shouldn't run for governor if that's what she wants to do. And it sounds like she's gaining a little bit of steam. So have at it and have fun with it and get your message out there. And I think that's good for democracy and it's good for Wisconsin.
Milwaukee police are warning pedestrians to be on the lookout for so-called knockout attacks. A 53-year-old man was seriously injured in what could have been an attack by a group of teens. Ed Filone, you're in Milwaukee or the Milwaukee area. Should people be worried about this so-called knockout game?
No, they shouldn't. There's always going to be random violence and attacks, teenagers being teenagers, but there's absolutely zero evidence that physical assaults randomly committed have increased at all. There's no crime statistics showing an increase, and there's no evidence that these random attacks are necessarily tied to race. And I know that conservative media has been playing up that this is supposedly black-on-white crime and it's increasing in frequency. So the idea that there's some increased game out there that black youth are playing that leads to higher incidences of attacks is a complete urban myth. It's not happening. There's no evidence to support it.
We're gonna leave it there for now. Congratulations to Jerome and Jackson. He is our Week in Review quiz winner today. He knew that what we do here in Wisconsin worse than any other state in the country when it comes to customer service, according to this report out this week, is that we're least likely to say please and thank you. We are the least courteous people in the country, according to this customer service report. So, but by the way, we do not swear. Ohio is the sweariest country or state in the country. So, congratulations to Jerome and Jackson. And thanks very much to Dan Kopanky and Ed Filone for being our guests during this edition of the Week in Review. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Christy Taylor for producing the program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
This is Mike Crane, director of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'll be hosting a 5-day Wisconsin Public Radio-sponsored trip to New York City, April 10th to the 14th. This getaway weekend features a live performance of Garrison Keillor's A Prairie Home Companion. The cost of this journey, guided by holiday vacations, includes airfare from locations throughout Wisconsin and accommodations in the heart of Times Square.